So what's hot and what's not among the new 2014 cars? We will talk with a guest auto reviewer this hour, and we'll welcome your questions and your favorites. Is there a new car that you want to test drive? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, September 27th. Our guest is Mark Savage. He is the auto reviewer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and an associate publisher at Kalmbach Publishing in Waukesha. He also has his own car website, savageonwheels.com. And we have provided a link to his website on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us. So first off, why don't we just talk about whether or not we should buy a new car or a used car? Do you have any advice as to what we should consider if we're deciding to buy a new car?
Well, I guess, it all comes down, of course, to how much money you have and, whether you're the kind of person who has to have a new car frequently. Economics tell you that if you can maybe keep a car for 5 to 7 years, that's when it's really the most efficient because you usually have paid it off and your expenses are fairly low because really, to be honest, most of the cars are made so well these days that, you should get 100, 150,000 miles pretty easily out of them. So, if you want to be economical, you're going to keep your car for 5, 7, maybe 10 years. If you're like a lot of us and would like to have a new car more frequently, mm-hmm. then you're more likely to want to get out there and get something new every 3 or 4 years. And I think if that's the case, you probably better lease because you'll at least be paying a little bit less as you're doing it if you're going to be trading it in that often.
I know that it's probably an individual thing, but what are some of the features a person should look for when buying a new car?
Well, I guess, again, this comes down to what are your needs. Do you have a family? Do you need more room? Do you need a big trunk? And most of the cars now have so many safety devices on them, and especially the high-end cars just have oodles and oodles of electronics now that are making the cars both, I guess, probably simpler to drive for all of us and just a lot safer and more likely that you won't have a problem. So, that would be an advantage of buying a newer car. And then, things to look for at that point is there's a new lane departure system that some of the cars have that if you approach either the center line or the side of the road, it will start beeping at you.
Oh.
Or I just had a Lincoln MKZ a week ago, and it actually slightly adjusts your steering. So, some people might find that a little bit odd, but
really?
It was kind of interesting to drive. I was driving from Milwaukee to Madison, and, you could let it kind of drift, of course, when no one was in the lane next to you, up next to the line, and it actually, when it gets there, it just tugs the wheel a little bit back to center you in the lane.
Wow,
and
so it can sense that you're crossing the center line.
It senses that you're crossing the center line or that you're about to. It's probably reading it when you're about 6 inches away. And then it tugs you back into the center of the lane. So that's, I think, a real interesting feature. Some of the stuff that has come out of the last couple of years, and I think, really is a good thing, even though I know this is all adding cost to our cars, is the backup camera, the rear view camera. So you put the car in reverse in your driveway, and as you put it in reverse, you can see right out the back, kind of low down onto the pavement. And especially if you got kids and they might leave your bicycle or tricycle or whatever out in the driveway, that's a good thing. And if you're on a busy street and you got to back out, that gives you another, way to see out the back. So that's another thing I think that is useful to people. And like I say, obviously there's anti-lock brakes that are all pretty much standard on everything anymore. And all the airbags that are both front and side bags now, so that if you're in a side collision that you're likely to not have any serious injuries anyway. So all good things. There are some other, I guess, fancier things that are on cars if you really go high end, and that's I think Mercedes calls it advanced parking assist, where you can pull up to a parallel parking spot and press the button and away it goes and it parks the car for you.
It will parallel park for you.
It will actually parallel park the car for you. Lexus also has something like that. And I guess this new system that Mercedes is going to have on their CLA sedan will actually do it in a perpendicular parking lot, too. So I guess you're going to the grocery store or whatever, you can press the button. I don't know how hard it is for most of us to perpendicularly park our car.
Right.
But, you know, I think probably parallel parking is probably the most challenging thing that most people have to do in their automobiles. So maybe that would be helpful.
We'll talk more about some of these newfangled or fancy pants features as we go along. But maybe before we go into specific models that I know you've reviewed recently, just generally, is there a good crop of 2014s out there right now?
Well, you know, I was sitting kind of reviewing this the other night, thinking of what all we got going this year. It is really a particularly good year, I think, for cars, and for cars that a lot of people, you know, will have heard of in the past and want to buy. And GM is really having a strong year this year, which, you know, may be a good thing for our economy overall, too. They've got a new pickup truck, which is, of course, the second best-selling vehicle in the nation, the Silverado, and then the GMC Sierra. So for the, you know, for the guys in Milwaukee and Wisconsin are both big pickup states, so that probably will be a big seller in this area. Toyota also is bringing out its new Tundra pickup, so those are things that the probably, you know, 80% of the market's probably guys and construction folks and so forth, so that will be big for them. But then there's some cars that you know, we all heard of, something like a Chevy Impala, which kind of has been a leading make model for the GM guys for a long time.
And you were particularly impressed with that Impala.
I was impressed with the Impala. My story says basically that, you know, this shows that Chevy is back. I think that the last couple of years, the GM cars have just been getting better and better, and the styling's been getting better and better, and just makes them more attractive to people. This one I like particularly because it is quiet. It's got good power. It appears to be very well made. I mean, obviously, I'm getting these cars, you know, there's a service that brings them around to all of the automotive reviewers. And these are all cars maybe with 1,000 to 10,000 miles on them, but it certainly was solid when I had it, and, you know, it handles well, it rides well. I think GM has done a great job the last couple models they've come out with just the suspension systems on the cars, so that's been encouraging. And, you know, it's a big enough car, you can seat five people in it, you got a monster trunk on this thing, and it looks good. I mean, this is a car that I actually had people comment to me, you know, what is that? What are you driving today? That doesn't look like anything I've seen lately. So I think that bodes well for Chevrolet.
What are you driving right now?
Well, right now I have a very bright red. I'm kind of watching for the cops everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Dodge Challenger. This is the SRT8 version with a monster 6.2 liter V8 in it. So it is a true muscle car. Very, I don't know, sporty, I guess. And it's a pretty fun car to drive. I have had the opportunity to get on a Road America with this and a couple similar cars, and they go pretty fast.
Well, we will talk about muscle cars and hot rods and even electric cars as we are talking about the 2014 model cars on the road already. And our guest is telling us which ones are good, and maybe we'll hear some that aren't so good, and we'll welcome your questions for him, maybe your own reviews. 1-800-642-1234. What models look appealing to you this year? 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Little GTO, you really looking fine.
We are talking about cars this hour and the new 2014 model cars with our guest Mark Savage, who is the auto reviewer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Are you in the market for a new car? What one looks good to you? What would you like to test drive? Or maybe you already have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Eric in Madison emails, since Mayor Paul Soglin declared tomorrow National Plug-in Day in Madison, what does your guest think of the all-electric Nissan Leaf? Mark?
Well, the Leaf is a really nice little car. I mean, obviously, this is not something that you'd probably think you're going to be driving cross-country because it's got, they claim it's got about an 85-mile range. Now, I had one this summer, and so obviously the weather was warm and not going to be draining the battery dramatically, but it would say it had a 100-mile range occasionally. So, you know, that's a great around-town car. I guess I could drive from here to Madison in it. I'd have to find a place to plug it in when I got there so I could get back. But it drives really nice. It is a comfortable car. And, you know, it is very easy. I mean, I have about a 12-mile commute to my office. And, you know, I'd plug it in at night, go to the office, drive back. I drove from my office, which is out in Waukesha, down to downtown Milwaukee and back. And, you know, you had plenty of range, went around town, went out to dinner one night. So it's a good city car. I thought it was fun, and it is easy. You know, you pull in your garage instead of being out in the weather when it's raining and snowing in Wisconsin here to fill up the gas tank. You just pull in and plug it into the outlet in the garage.
Yeah, how much are they about?
You're going to look at someplace between $25,000 and $40,000 for a plug-in car. And that 25 would be really at the low end and probably after you've had a government rebate on it. So you're really looking more like 30 to 40, the Volt being the other one, the Chevy Volt.
And the I guess there really isn't a mileage on these things because they're mostly electric, right?
Well, right. The Leaf is totally electric, yeah. So you never ever have to put gas in it. The Volt has a that they basically call a gas engine generator, and the generator generates electricity. So when you're actually, you know, when you run out of your electric charge from your home or wherever, then the gas engine kicks in, but you're not actually running on the gas power. It's charging up the batteries and giving you electric power. So it's still all electric power, which is real smooth. And I guess that's the, you know, in addition to obviously not polluting as much, it's really a very smooth and quiet system, so you know, hardly notice you have anything running because it's just maybe a little bit of electric whine, and that's, you know, you don't even notice that unless you're at really low speeds. And the Leaf has a little beeper on it, kind of like the trucks you always hear backing up, just to beep so that when you back up, somebody knows your car is moving and coming towards them. So,
well, we have
an interesting system.
Andy in Madison says, if engineers can design a car that can park itself, why can't they come up with one that gets 50 miles to the gallon?
Well, you know, there's what they call market forces out there. I bet you we could probably give you a car that gets 50 miles to the gallon, but you might not want to pay the price for it. Or it might not be as safe as we'd like them to be. And I think that's one thing people tend to forget these days, especially in the U.S. market, is there are so many safety regulations on the cars that they have to meet, you know, 5-mile-an-hour bumpers and airbags and so forth. And all that's great. I'm not against any of that. It's just that that adds weight to cars. And the more weight you add to the car, the less likely it gets 50 miles to the gallon. So it's possible, and I really think, you know, in my mind, probably the perfect mix currently is the hybrid cars that are out there because you don't run out of range because you do have gasoline power, but you also, you know, can run for quite a while on electricity and or it's using the electricity at the low speeds where all of our cars are the least efficient.
Yeah. Are there some hybrids out there that you want to recommend or maybe one that you've driven?
Well, you know, I know everybody knows about the Prius and all the both the Honda and the Toyota brands are out there, but a number of other cars now come with hybrid power plants. You know, everything from Ford Focuses. You know, the Escape used to have that plant. I think they're going to have a new hybrid on that one, but I'm guessing that in the next couple of years, you're going to see probably 50% of the cars in the marketplace that will have a hybrid system available, and you know, maybe that'll cost you an extra $3,000 or $4,000, but But what you've seen with the hybrids, too, is that the more and more of them that are out there, both their efficiency improves slightly and the cost comes down, because then you've got that, you know, like I say, those market forces are helping you. Now you can make 100,000 of these instead of 10,000, and you can make them a little less expensively. So,
yeah, let's go to Buck in Sturgeon Bay now. Hi, Buck.
Hi. And my question is, I'm sure it's out there, but I haven't seen it. Is there an analysis or a study done that shows what the cost of electricity is at your house to charge your battery versus actually just paying for a car or buying the gas in a car that gets 45 miles to the gallon?
Well, I'm sure there's probably a study out there, because there's basically a study for everything out there. But
not at your fingertips.
Not at my fingertips, no. I know where I'd been reading before when I was working on the Leaf story, is that I think it was going to cost me all of about 15 cents a night or something like that to charge up my battery in the car. And you figure, you know, if you're driving to and from work every week, maybe it's going to cost you a couple bucks or a buck. And, you know, even a gallon of gas is going to cost you that these days. So in that regard, you know, it doesn't cost you a whole lot to add that to your electric load on your house. And per mile, it's going to be pennies on the mile, a lot less anyway than a car would be. Obviously, if you can get 50 miles to the gallon, it just comes a little bit closer to that, that's all. But right now, the electric is the cheapest way to charge up your car and to, you know, have power source in it anyway.
Thank you, Buck. We'll go to Jill in Rhinelander now. Hello, Jill.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a question. Well, northern Wisconsin, there's a lot of freezing, ice, salt on the roads, etc. All these fancy sensor gizmos that are underneath cars, have they been tested for these adverse conditions, and how long will they last? Do they corrode, fog over, have to be replaced?
Good question, Jill.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, what you'll notice is if you have a backup camera and there's snow on your back bumper where the camera is, you're not going to see out very well. So that's one thing to think about. But the sensors, a lot of the sensors have been out there for a long time, and they have been tested, and they will stand up to the cold weather and so forth. And most of these are, you know, located internally, although obviously some are going to get moist no matter where you put them. But the sensors really haven't been a problem, and a lot of these, like I say, have been on cars for probably, you know, 8 to 10 years, depending on how they're being used. So I don't think you have to worry too much about the sensors. I will say, and my mechanic here in town will love to hear me say this, that the more goodies they put on the cars, the more expensive they get to fix, and people are going to start asking themselves, do I really need every single electronic option on my car to... Because when I take it into the shop and something has died, whether it's a sensor or the you know, the computer brain in your car, you're going to pay what some of us might consider a small fortune to get it fixed. But more and more, a lot of this stuff comes standard, so you're not really going to have a big choice on that.
Thanks, Jill. David in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, and good morning. I have a question for your guest about a Ford Raptor pickup truck. If he has taken one for a ride, has you know, put one through the ringer, and what is his opinion on it?
Well, the Ford pickups are the best selling trucks in the nation, so I guess best selling vehicle in the nation. So they must be doing something right. You know, to be quite honest, I've always felt more comfortable in the GM trucks, just from a comfort standpoint, interior wise, but the Fords are certainly good vehicles. You know, they have strong engines, and you know, if you're going to take it off, if you go off road at all, the four wheel drive system works perfectly fine, and they've had good resale value because they are so daggone popular. So it's a good vehicle, and you know, they just revamped that, I think, a year and a half ago. So really, all the pickups on the market are basically brand new and have all the latest gadgets and gizmos on them. So,
no, that's the Ford F-150 Raptor in particular.
Well, the Raptor in particular is their kind of super upscale version of it, and it looks mean and looks tough. So, a lot of that is the cladding on the outside and the grill and so forth. So, but the underneath, a lot of it is similar to what you get on a standard F-150, except for you're going to have fancier shocks, and so you're ready to go off-roading with it.
Well, we will. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will be back talking more about the new 2014 cars. I know that one of our listeners wants to take a test drive in the new Corvette Stingray. And I'm pretty sure our guest, Mark Savage, has taken that for a spin. We'll find out about that. And whatever cars you'd like to talk about, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are going to talk about Mustangs and Corvettes and other new cars. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Friday, September 27th. The 2014 models are out on the road, and we are talking about some of the best of them and maybe some of the worst of them. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are happy to have with us Mark Savage. He is the auto reviewer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, an associate publisher at Kalmbach Publishing in Waukesha. He also has his own car website, savageonwheels.com. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you'd like to join us with a question about a new car. Is there a model that you're looking at that's appealing to you? Let us know. Mark, before we go back to the phones, we did have a Facebook listener who said simply, the new Corvette. What's the new Corvette?
I was surprised it took this long for someone to mention.
Yeah,
the new Corvette is just being built right now and just coming out. They're using the Stingray name on it, which was popular back in the '60s, and it's totally re-engineered, new chassis, new everything. So if you see it, you're gonna think that looks like a Corvette, but it does definitely looks a little more modern than some of the past models have been. I have not driven it yet, but I have seen one, or I've seen a couple, actually. And I think it's going to be a big hit for them. I mean, unfortunately, every time they redo a Corvette, it gets a little pricier, so you're looking at about $60,000 for something like that, just for starters. But it will have a giant 450-horse V8 engine in it, and that's pretty much what I think what most people want to see in a Corvette. A lot of speed, but it's also got a lot of new technology and a whole new interior in it. So the technology here is what they call a drive mode selector, so the driver can kind of tune the car into whatever performance mode he wants it to be in. So you can dial it in, whether it's wet roads or whether it's you're out on a long stretch of highway and you want to maybe smooth out your ride a little bit more. So there's a lot of functionality in there. And my experience over the last couple of generations of Corvettes is they're really very comfortable to ride and drive in, but you also have to realize that probably the demographics on a Corvette now is a 50 to 75-year-old guy that's out there wanting to relive his youth a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think this new one is kind of aimed to try and bring that down a little bit more into the 40-year-old range, but I guess we'll see how successful it is at that. But I think it's going to be a really, really sharp car for them to have.
Yeah. I'm going to confess that back when I was in high school, I wanted a Corvette, the ones that were popular in the 70s or even 60s. So I did want one then, and I still thought about it, but I guess I'm too practical now. So
that's the hard part is the older we all get, maybe we get a little more practical, and even though maybe, folks when they get a little older tend to have a little more cash to spend on something like this, but I've told my wife a couple of times we may be getting to that Buick stage of our life where things feel, it's nice to have a car that has a real nice suspension in it. So.
Well, I had my last car, which I drove forever, was a 1993 red bright red Celica, Toyota Celica. So that was little sporty car. I really loved that car.
Well, and you know, the Celica was a fantastic model for them, and also the MR2 for Toyota. And those have kind of come and gone, and every once in a while they'll bring something like that back. And I know kind of some of the Scion models from Toyota are kind of aimed at the more youthful audience out there. So maybe we'll see another one that fits that profile anyway. And you know, and you brought us back in with the Mustang talk. There is not a new Mustang right now, but their 60th anniversary is coming up very shortly into next year. And so I'm thinking we're going to see something pretty special for the Mustangs here, probably in the next 6 months that we'll probably see it, and then maybe up to a year or so before it'll actually be available for people to buy.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because Gary Knowles, our last guest, he's a travel writer and a car buff, and he said be sure to ask him about the Mustang, and that's coming out in 6 months, you say.
Right. Yeah. My guess is we'll probably see at the Detroit Auto Show, which is always in January, that they'll probably unveil that officially there. I'm sure we're going to start seeing more and more spy photos all the time, but you know, folks that watch the car sites know that this thing is not far down the road here, and obviously they're going to make a big push with it being an anniversary year.
And since we're on fancy or sporty cars, he also said, ask him, your guest, about the new Porsche. He says it's a hybrid, and it costs $800,000 or something.
Yes. You know, those are the cars that, for some reason, they don't let Midwest auto writers get in very frequently.
Yeah.
It's very rare we see something like that. It's kind of like Lamborghinis and Ferraris. I think they're going to probably sell them all without us talking to people about them. But, yes, you know, I think this is the other thing when we were talking about hybrids. Most of us think of the hybrids as kind of the low-power, easy driving cars that you know, like a Prius that we'd all be able to afford at some point. And there are the hybrids that are all power and the electrics. You know, electric motors have instant torque. It's just, you know, you think about if you turn on your fan or you turn on any electric device, boom, it's on, and it's on, and it doesn't take long for it to come up to power. So they have a lot of power in these things. In fact, some people have been putting battery packs into older cars and drag racing them, especially out in California, because they are so powerful. You know, you got to charge the batteries up all the time. But other than that, it's you know, so yes, it's coming. I got a feeling most of us won't be driving those here. But
no, I don't think so.
I will look forward to seeing my first one whenever that is.
All right, Cam in La Crosse. Thanks for waiting, Cam. You're on the air.
Good morning. I've been reading about diesel engines, that there's been a lot of advances in them, that they get terrific mileage, and they're not smelly, and they start well in cold weather. Can you discuss diesel cars?
Yeah, diesel cars, they're very big in Europe, and they're not so big here. There's a Chevy Cruze diesel, and there's a Volkswagen Jetta, and I believe Passat has a diesel also. And, you know, these are nice driving cars. Everyone thinks of a diesel as being something that you'll see in a pickup truck, and it's, like, say, a smoky and smelly and kind of rumbles a lot. And they do rumble, and there's no getting around that. When you start them up when they're cold, they really rumble a lot. But my experience the last couple I've driven is it takes a mile or a mile and a half, and then that smooths out. These are all turbo diesels, so it gives them more horsepower and more torque right up front. So you can get on the gas if you're, you know, getting onto the freeway or something like that, and then have plenty of power. They do not stink anymore. I can't remember the last car that I've had that had a diesel in it that I could even, you know, smell it at all. So they're cleaner burning. They've got good power, and yeah, gas mileage is generally, I think the Cruze is rated up to almost 50 miles per gallon. I think it's 46 or something like that, and I think the Volkswagens are around 40 to 42. So, yeah, they're very good options. The only thing I will say, and I probably say it every time I write about these, and I'm sure the diesel makers are tired of hearing it, but I've never been to a gas station yet where the diesel pump wasn't the oiliest, slimiest pump in the lot. So if you're offended by having kind of oily, smelly hands after you fill up your car, then that you may want to give it a second thought.
Thanks, Cam. Ron in Duluth is with us now. Hello, Ron.
Hi. I rented a Chevy Equinox a earlier this year, and I was surprised that I'm pretty tall, and I could stretch my legs all the way, you know, without bending the knees, and it was great if I wanted to pull over and take a nap or something like that. Are there any other cars that are good for tall people, you know, being comfortable and stretching out?
Well, that's a good question. I'm a shorter guy. I'm about 5'5", so tall doesn't bother me any. But you're right. I think what you'll see is anything that's kind of a crossover, obviously pickup trucks or something like that, you got a lot of headroom and legroom in there. But the crossover vehicles that I like to consider basically tall station wagons, because a lot of them are offered with four-wheel drive, most of those have plenty of headroom, and usually if you're especially taller torso, that's what you're going to need there. Most cars, you can put the seat back pretty far and not really have to worry too much about the legroom. Obviously, maybe if you're looking at a sports car or something, at a Mazda Miata or something like that, that might be a little tougher. I did have a taller friend that, when I had a Miata one time, said, well, it would be nice if I could ride with the roof down all the time. But most of the cars, you can get plenty of legroom. It used to be, I think we were looking at Lincoln Town Cars and Crown Victorias and things like that, if you're a taller and bigger guy. But more and more, I think legroom and headroom are less and less of a problem, because so many of the cars have a rounded roof line on them now, so that gives you a little extra headspace.
Yeah, so, Ron, how tall are you?
6'5".
And the Chevy Equinox was good for you, though.
Yeah, but I didn't really like it. It kind of lagged on highway speeds and made a lot of noise.
Well, my husband's also 6'5", so he's had this issue too. You should have saw him in my Celica. That was pretty funny. But but he drives an SUV, and so there are some SUVs that I'll ask you, Mark. Are there? He's in a Honda. It's a small SUV, and it's plenty plenty of legroom for him there. But he is in the market for a new car. Any decent SUVs in the 2014 models?
Well, I'll tell you, one of them that I've already driven, which I was favorably impressed with, and I was surprised, was the Subaru Forester. I like Subarus generally, but the Forester never has seemed like anything very special to me, but they remodeled it for this season, or, you know, this year, and it feels like it's a little roomier inside, and just it feels a little better built. It's got an available a 2-liter turbo engine in it, and that gives you lots of horsepower. So even if you're, you know, throwing a lot of stuff in the back, because it's kind of like a wagon with it being a kind of a crossover vehicle, you know, if you throw a lot of stuff in there, you still have plenty of power. So I was impressed with that one in particular. I like the Equinox that he mentioned is good. The Terrain is also good, the GMC version out there. And, I think there's also going to be a new Toyota Highlander coming out this year, and I would suspect that will be a real nice one too.
We are talking with Mark Savage. He is the auto reviewer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a car you would like him to review or a question about cars. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the 2014 new model cars with our guest, an auto writer, auto reviewer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 9 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Friday, September 27th. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Pat in Oregon emails, what does your guest think of the 2014 Toyota Corolla?
Good question. I haven't been able to get into drive that one just yet, but from the looks of it, I think Toyota has finally come to terms with the fact that it has to make its cars look kind of new and different every once in a while and not stick with their old body styles quite so long. This has a much more rounded roof line, and a kind of a chiseled front end, a little bit more radical looking nose on it. So I think anybody who buys one will feel like I'm getting a new car, not a just a rewarmed version of the past year's model. But you know, I'm anticipating it being a real nice car. They're still using their same four-cylinder 1.8-liter engine in it. So that won't change any, but that's been a very sufficient engine for the vehicle for a number of years. And, you know, has variable valve timing and all that good stuff that gets it a decent horsepower. And I think, you know, I think people are going to like it. From what I hear, and I haven't seen the interior yet, is that they've really done a nice job on revamping that interior on it too, because I think the Toyotas in particular have been getting a little long in the tooth, as they say, just for the styling of the interiors on them. So I'm looking forward to that, and they started adding some new features to it, you know, like push-button start, which more and more of the cars have now, and heated front seats and all that good stuff.
Wow. Wendy wants to know, any recommendations for a small, efficient pickup? I go off-road into hilly western Wisconsin.
Yeah, boy, I know, the small pickups have kind of, I won't say disappeared, but they've certainly, they're not as many as there used to be out there. I mean, the Ford Ranger went away a year or two ago, and that was certainly a real popular model. I guess the Toyota Tacoma is a very, very stout vehicle. I've known several people with those that they've gotten, I don't know, probably 10 or 12 years of use out of. So I think that's a real good, you know, bet for something like that. And I know, I believe GM is going to come out with a new smaller pickup. The Colorado is the Chevy version, I think. Not this year. I believe it's going to be next year that one's going to be out.
Tammy,
so if she can wait a while, that she can do that.
Tammy is with us in Menominee. Hello, Tammy.
Hi, good morning. I'm sorry, I'm going to back up a little bit and ask you a question about the electric cars as far as the battery packs. What's the life of those, and how much is it to replace one, if you know?
Well, I've been told a number of different things. One is, I believe a couple of the car makers, and I believe Toyota in particular, has a 10-year warranty on theirs. So at least you know that you're covered if you're going to keep it for a fairly long period of time. I don't know exactly the cost. I've heard estimates, and estimates are up to about $4,000 that I've heard. So I guess part of that will depend is how many of these are made and how many you know, replacement packs are available out there. I'm guessing that the more of the years go by here and that the more is being cranked out by the various automakers, that cost will start to go down some, so it won't be quite as maybe prohibitive. But if I had a 10-year warranty, I'd feel like I have a pretty good shot of getting all of my use out of it, and then it may become more of an issue for the used car market, that if somebody buys one that's maybe 8 or 9 years old, and you know, how many more years do I have left on this battery pack? So it's going to be a pricey replacement if you have to replace it, but I think you have a while to go before you'd have to do that.
Thanks, Tammy. Kim in Muscadet is with us. Hi, Kim.
Yes, good morning. I had a question in regards to the diesel Chevy Cruze. I will be in the car market. I travel about 120 miles round trip for work right now, and I know that the Chevy Cruze has gotten real good ratings all around, but investigating the diesel, I know it's higher cost, and it would be also higher to keep the fuel in there, with diesel being more expensive than regular unleaded. So just wondering, with the increased cost versus the extra gas mileage that it gives, is it really beneficial to make that purchase opposed to just like the regular Chevy Cruze?
Well, you may be like one of the prime candidates for something like this. If you're especially, sounds like you're in the car now, so you might be on the highway, because the diesel, that's where it's particularly efficient, is when you're cruising at the highway speeds. You're right. It will cost you, you know, maybe even right now probably about 50 cents more per gallon for the diesel fuel. So you do have to take that into consideration. But I would think, especially if you're driving a lot of highway miles, that you would make that cost up over probably a 3 or 4 year period. So you're right. It costs a little bit extra up front, and it's going to cost you a little more to put it in the car, your fuel in the car every week. But if you're going to keep the car for 5 to 7, 8 years, something like that, I think you'd make it all back up.
Thanks, Kim. Stanley in West Dallas. Hi, Stanley.
Well, good morning. Yes, I was just going to walk out the door with my dog, take her for a walk, and I turned turning the radio off, and you started talking about diesel engines. Well, I have a a 2013 Jetta sports wagon, diesel with a six-speed standard transmission. I've had it for a little over a year now, and it's one of the greatest cars I've had. This is my third Volkswagen with a diesel engine, and it's a lot of fun to drive. I love the shifting part of it. And I get on the highway. Now, this is documented. I always write down my mileage. And I get 54 on the highway.
Cool. Because we're almost out of time, Mark, a quick comment on that?
Well, I'm not surprised. I think that's what people are finding with, especially if they do a lot of highway driving. And our last caller will be happy to hear that. I think that you're getting that kind of gas mileage, because that would... You know, the better gas mileage you get, the quicker it makes up that cost, that little bit extra that you're going to have to pay up front. So, I think that's fabulous. I'm happy to hear somebody who's getting that good of mileage. I am not surprised to hear 40 to 45, but 54 is pretty phenomenal. So that sounds great.
Eric emails, were there any cars you tested that weren't any good or that you didn't like?
You know, people ask me that all the time, and I would say 10 or 15 years ago, that was a lot easier question to answer, because the car, my friends make fun of me because I'm picking on cars because, you know, the sun visors don't slide or don't have extenders and things like that, because you're trying to find something that you think doesn't really work real well on this car. I was trying to think in one of our breaks is what I haven't liked lately. Well, one car that was disappointing, I'll at least say that, was the Hyundai Genesis that I had just a couple weeks back. And this was their 5.0 R-Spec, which is kind of their racier version of this. And it has plenty of power and all that good stuff, 400 and some horsepower. But it's got this real tight kind of BMW-like suspension on it that is kind of can be painful in town. You know, it's like you get on the crumbling cement streets that we have around the Milwaukee area here, and it can be kind of a harsh ride. And the thing that really kind of irritated me the most is that Hyundai and Kia are are basically cousins, and Kia seems to figure out how to get the steering feel just right, or very close to it anyway.
Right.
And this Hyundai had such heavy steering that I don't think a lot of people would want to drive it for very long just because they're going to be tired.
But it's good that you had to really think about it to find one that you didn't really like all that much.
Well, right.
We got to wrap it up. Mark, thanks very much for being with us.
I appreciate being on.
It was great. I hope we can talk again. Mark Savage is the auto reviewer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.